I feel like I'm Michael Scott now, and you're like, what's a funny... Hey, what about whenever you call me? You already know that I go to bed early, and so I enjoy my late evening time to just wind down. Mm-hmm. And so when you call me, I essentially assume that it's an emergency. It's now 9:30 at night. I'm really getting ready to just call it a day. You call me, and you're like, first off, I can't even understand half of the sentence that you're saying. You're like, man, yeah. Oh, man, hold on now. Because you have butt dialed me before, mm-hmm. and I assume that 9:30 at night, there's something wrong, or you butt dialed me. And so mm-hmm. I couldn't tell which the case was when you called me. Mm-hmm. All I could mm-hmm. tell was you're calling me from your Temu headphones, trying to watch Temu TV.
Toza.
And dude, like, I know what, I mean, should we ask, I know what to ask Santa Claus for. I'm going to write him a letter today. And
dude,
I asked him to bring you some real technology so that I don't have to deal. And selfishly, it's like the Homer bowling ball. Selfishly, I don't have to deal with your crappy phone calls because you got like stuff that actually works.
Well, let me say this.
Samsung.
I had like AirPods, like Apple, and I accidentally washed them in a load of laundry.
Because you're a five-year-old. Yeah.
Also, the guy who does laundry, so...
I wash my own stuff too sometimes, okay?
No, you told me the other day that your mom still comes over and does laundry.
Shut up. How awesome would that be?
That would be amazing. You're like, Mom, I need you to come over to iron a shirt. I got a big meeting tomorrow.
Well, son, no. I'm real busy. Mom, this is important.
Yeah, I had AirPods, but then I washed them and dried them. Mm-hmm. And they still surprisingly worked, but like the battery was just shot. And they always kind of like hurt my ears. I haven't tried like the new ones because mine were like
they would shock me. I don't know what was going on.
No, they just hurt my ears. They're just not comfortable. So I looked online, and oddly enough, these like Toza.
I don't want to talk about it, dude.
They had like really good reviews.
Yo, I bet they're all paid reviews because those things suck. Important fact here, and important fact that I don't want overlooked. When he calls me, this mm-hmm. is what I hear. So I'm like, hello?
Hold on. Hey, let me go get a bowl. I'll be right back.
Oh.
Hey friends, welcome back to your favorite podcast, That Would Be Rad, the podcast that majors in 80s and 90s nostalgia, comic culture, all things paranormal, and minors in retro video games, tabletop RPGs, pre-internet mysteries, and raising our kids to be half as cool as we were back in the 80s. I'm your host, Tyler Bentz, and this is your other host,
Woody Brown.
Hey, pal.
Hey, man.
I mean, I think we should kind of get right into it. So, the reason we're covering this topic that we're getting into today was a very natural progression, if you look at the show. Mm-hmm. Woody and I, this whole show is literally just two best friends talking for our new listeners. Mm-hmm. Literally, that's it. And we'll sometimes loosely have a topic, and if it goes off the rails, so be it. But today, our show was sort of birthed out of, we mentioned the Glimmer Man on one episode, and then from there, it was like, oh, let's just have a full Glimmer Man episode. Mm-hmm. That was the last episode. And then naturally it was like, well, you know, we like to cover like pop culture kind of stuff yeah. mixed with like the paranormal stuff because that's the stuff we're into. And so the natural progression for me was The Predator.
We are a rescue team, not assassins. Now, what do we got to do?
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
We pick up their trail at the chopper, run them down, grab those hostages before anybody knows we were there. What do you mean we?
Deep in the jungle, where nothing that lives is safe.
You lose it here, you're in a world of hurt.
Showtime, kid. Knock, knock.
An elite rescue squad.
You're bleeding, man.
I ain't got time to bleed.
Is being led by the ultimate warrior.
We need the best. That's why you're here.
But now...
What's got Billy so spooked?
There's something out there waiting for us. And it ain't no man.
They're up against the ultimate enemy.
Holy Mother of God.
Nothing like it has ever been on Earth before.
She says the jungle just came alive and took him.
We cannot see it.
No blood, no bodies. We hit nothing.
But it sees the heat of our bodies and the heat of our fear.
Whatever it is out there, it killed Hopper. And now it wants us.
It kills for pleasure.
He was skinned alive!
It hunts for sport.
He's killing us one at a time.
We're all gonna die.
But this time, it's picked the wrong man to hunt.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Century Fox presents Arnold Schwarzenegger. Predator. The hunt begins Friday, June 12th at theaters everywhere.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, we were talking, and it's like, man, all of this stuff is, it's been, a, well, I say it's been a while since I've watched it, probably within the last 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been long enough to where, man, I was really in the mood to rewatch this movie. And honestly, man, I couldn't believe that I know that we kind of briefly, in a way, brought it up when we talked about the movie Prey over on our Patreon that, you know, I think we released like a preview episode of that. And so we had talked about it, but we never really just dove into this movie on its own and talked about, you know, its significance to us as kids that grew up in the 80s, and then just some amazing stuff about the movie in general. So, dude, like, I can't tell you how excited I was to just kind of grab a bucket of popcorn, pop this movie into the VCR, and press play. Now, I will say, before we dive in, this was a movie that here recently I was like, you know what? Man, I think it's time for my oldest to watch this movie with me. I was about his age, honestly, 2 years younger, right? But in 80s time, like, we're talking about, like, there's a difference in the dollar, what something was worth in the 80s to now, what the dollar was worth. The age, I think, is, like, I was 20 by the time I was 7 in the 80s. You know what I mean? Right. As far as, like, what I had watched.
Yeah.
But I guess that fatherhood, like, sort of gut told me, well, why don't you just watch it again first, just to make sure? Because, of course, there's a couple scenes that are iconic that I remember that didn't necessarily scar me as a kid, but sort of was like, oof, that's intense. And then some that I had completely forgotten about right away in the beginning. We'll get to that, too. So, in other words, I'm going to tell you on the front end of this episode, I decided real quick that I'm not going to let my son watch this just yet.
I think the large amount of jokes.
Well, that'll do it too.
Probably.
Yeah.
And I'm talking like within the first,
5 minutes at least.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep, so I got that written down in the watch notes for sure. So, folks, if it's been a long time, we're not only going to remind you of the greatness of this movie, what our thoughts are about it and everything, but we're going to kind of take you through a little bit, talk about some hilarious scenes, some scenes that stand out as like couldn't be more 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Some trivia that I actually never knew until we started digging in. And then some, you know, how it all relates to everything and the ins and outs of the franchise and that kind of thing.
Sound the innies good? And outies.
The innies and outies. Mm-hmm. First, can I just say that the second that I press play, there's actually a scene that, man, I got to be honest, I'm not even sure. This is terrible to say. I'm not even sure if I had noticed it before. And that is at the very beginning, you know, as the movie's starting, you see this spaceship kind of fly by Earth and then a sort of pod or whatever shoots out from it and it goes into Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah.
And then it starts with the next scene. And I don't remember that at all, dude. Do you?
No, not at all. It's funny because, so you had seen the movie like, you know, not too far away, but like, I mean, it's probably been, I mean, I would say like 12, 15 years since I'd seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, I was like really excited because it had been a long time. But like what Woody said, this is like one of those movies that like as a kid of the 80s, like I was telling my wife last night, she's like, I'm not watching that. Of course.
Right.
That's just how she is. And I was like, I don't think you understand like how important this was to every young boy in the 80s. Like, I've seen this movie 1,000 times.
I know.
And but then I realized, oh, I've seen this movie 1,000 times way before I ever even met you, like my wife.
Right.
And so it was like awesome just jumping right back in. But yeah, same with you. I didn't, and I had that in my notes too. I don't remember the spaceship, but what was cool was, you know, we did that Prey episode, like you were saying, and there is a scene in that. And so I was like, oh, that's cool. That's a cool like callback, because I didn't, you know, I totally forgot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't even think of that actually whenever I was watching it as that being the same.
Yeah.
The same ship. And it's interesting though, because as you go on to watch the movie, I don't know. I think because I forgot that scene, I remember kind of thinking like, what is it? What are they, you know, like it being more mysterious, that scene kind of sets it up to be like, oh, it's something otherworldly. But anyway,
yeah.
Right after that scene, I thought it was amazing that it just cuts to like this helicopter's flying and you see these guys. Like the helicopter lands, you see these guys getting off of the, I got to do it, chopper. And, you know, one by one, it's like this one guy's in, well, first, I think it's Jesse Ventura pops out of there and he's got like a black MTV t-shirt on.
Yeah.
You know, tucked into jeans. And then you've got this guy that is in, I think he's in camo with some like cool like glasses. And then a dude that's in a full suit.
Yeah.
Business suit style coming off. And then, like, so everybody unloads. And then this is the most, this scene right here is the most, like, one of the most iconic Arnold Schwarzenegger moments. Okay. It comes in, he's sitting, like, he's just leaning back, sitting in this Huey, this helicopter.
Yep.
And you can kind of just see his profile. And he's just leaning back, lighting a cigar.
Yeah.
With like a baseball cap on. The tightest red polo shirt of all time. And he's just kind of like lighting the cigar and he just like moseys out of this bad boy.
Yeah.
Just looking so freaking bad to the bone, man.
Yeah, dude. Like if you want to like sum up. So like when we were a kid, it was like, it's kind of sad because it is so different now. I mean, I know people like talk about like, oh, well, we still have movies like that, like The Expendables and da da da. But like,
it's just not the same, dude.
Dude, for any of you guys that didn't quite grow up in our generation, I mean, Woody's like, you're two generations back.
Just cut it out.
But for any of you who are a little younger, maybe the action movie, you know, was like such a pivotal and like big part of like the 80s.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that's like I remember my dad. I think that's how we got around, like, being able to watch these, like, you know, not, I mean, movies that we probably shouldn't have seen that young. Sure,
certainly not appropriate.
Yeah, but it was like your dad was gonna watch, like, whatever the newest, like, bad action movie was. And so, you know, that's what we grew up on. So these big, huge, like, muscle-bound dudes. And this movie is just, like, it's the perfect, like, sort of culmination of that, because like the whole cast for the most part are like those dudes.
Yeah, you know? Man. I mean, it's like, it's taking it when you start watching this movie, it's taking a time machine in which, by the way, we're not sponsored by HBO or Max or whatever it's called now.
I refuse to.
You can currently, as of, you know, late August, 2023, you can stream both Predator 1 and Predator 2 on Predator 2 on there.
Beijing, Mr. Herman.
But, you know, and to be honest, I started streaming it and then I put it in VHS because I wanted to make sure that intro scene wasn't like a new edition or something.
I thought the same thing, yeah.
But it's not. And anyway, it's taking a time machine back into the 80s. This is quintessential, over-the-top everything.
Oh, I mean,
everything. And yes, it's corny. And yes, it's like silly. But somehow, like, I don't think they absolutely couldn't pull this off nowadays. I mean,
no,
I can't even make it really through the expendable stuff. I mean, it's cool and it's over the top action and stuff. And it is neat that so many of these stars kind of get together. But in fact, we'll talk about this later too. I think it's easy to conclude that perhaps that idea, the concept of Expendables, is probably taken from this movie, because, I mean, they even say it at one point.
Better believe it.
Yeah. It's just impossible to make a movie like this now.
Yeah.
And it have that same feel, I think. It would either feel too comedic, or it would feel too over-the-top gory, or it would feel cheesy. I mean, not that, again, this isn't cheesy. It's just, it's so good. And it is a movie that I think, if you grew up in the 80s and 90s, you either saw it, and it just, like, there's moments that scarred you for life. Like, for my wife, like, she will absolutely not watch it again because she saw it when she was a kid, and then she was, you know, scarred
Predator,
for life.
Predator, she won't?
Yeah, yeah. No, no, no. She won't watch it anymore.
Which, real quick, by the way, did you notice the scene that kind of looks like, you know, what the movie that you're trying to scour the world to find?
Yeah, that's the scene I'm talking about. I didn't remember. I'll get to that.
Yeah,
did completely, even as many times as I've watched it now, full disclosure, the last time that I watched this movie, maybe like 6 months, a year ago, maybe more, it was while I was like working and doing something, so I wasn't really like looking up, I guess, but I had completely forgot about that movie, but yes. Okay. I mean,
during your like recovery from like the bicep.
Shut up, man. Okay. Some of the lines, dude, I just had to like write down. So Arnold gets off of this chopper, and we're not going to go scene by scene here because that would take too long.
Yeah.
But just some of the things that I just thought were hilarious. You know, again, he's got this super tight polo shirt on. He's just ripped to shreds.
Yeah.
And one of the first things that you hear him say, well, first this guy walks up and he's, you know, I guess a general. And he says, "You're looking good, Dutch."
Yeah.
And Arnold replies with, "Been a long time, General." And what's interesting is the general is actually played by this guy named R.G. Armstrong. And if, Tyler, when you were watching it, and listener, whenever you go back and watch it, because I know we're going to fire you up about this movie, you'll there's something about this general that you're like, man, this guy looks familiar. And if you're a big fan of late 80s, early 90s movies like we are, you'll recognize him to be Pruneface from the Dick Tracy movie.
Yep, exactly. Which, by the way, he does have that, like...
He just automatically looks like Pruneface.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. It didn't do a lot.
It's that thing where, like, as an adult, I've thought this, like, quite a bit, where you look at these actors and you're like, man, that guy or that girl just... They came out of the womb just looking weird.
Old,
weird. But then at the same time, you're like...
Unique, man, unique.
Yeah, that's what I'm about to say. It's like, at the same time, it's like... It's so unique that, like, they've literally created a career of being, like, those weird character actors because of that. And I think that's pretty cool.
It's very cool. Next comes one of my all-time favorite scenes in any movie of any genre ever. The camera kind of comes in, and you see this, like, the general's leading Arnold Schwarzenegger's character called Dutch into this sort of almost like a tropics office building, right? You can tell it's just hot in there. There's a ceiling fan, and far back in the back room, there's someone working at a desk. And Arnold's like talking to the general, and he kind of like slow looks over there. And dude, that moment in time, you got to go back after this and watch this moment. It's so like awkwardly long until he says, "Huh?" And he says, "Dylan, you son of a bitch." And Carl Weathers is there.
Yeah.
Also looking sweaty. Both of their skin just oiled up, dude. They're using body butter like it's nobody's business.
Yeah.
And just imagine the tubs of that stuff that had to get like transported to South America when they filmed
it. Oh, dude, especially like the other black dude.
Oh, yeah, dude.
I mean, he at all times is like glistening. I mean, it looks like he has like Vaseline.
Yeah.
On
Bill
his face.
Duke.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's his name.
Which he's awesome.
He is amazing, dude.
He's another one of those weird kind of...
Yeah, he's got a very unique face, dude, that you will remember him immediately from so many movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to talk about him later because he's actually really cool. So he says, "Dylan, you son of a..." And then they proceed. So then they lock hands in an arm wrestling pose in midair. They're both standing. And they're just like... And there's just like maybe 3 to 5 seconds of just this, their biceps flexing in midair.
Yep.
And then it's them just, essentially arm wrestling in midair, which, again, might be the most 80s thing that I've ever seen, and it's fantastic.
Yes, it is.
I want to do that all the time with everyone now.
Just like every greeting that you have, it just immediately just coalesces into an arm wrestling.
Correct. Match. And then, unfortunately for everyone else, your name to me now and forever will be Dylan. So whenever I see you, I'm just going to say, Dylan, you son of a bitch. And then I'm going to arm wrestle you right then and there, wherever we are. Oh. Wedding, funeral, you know, whatever it is.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Something out there waiting for us. And it ain't no man.
Hey, this is Bryce Johnson from the Bigfoot Collectors Club, and you're listening to Tyler and Woody on That Would Be Rad, because that is rad.
It's just so, God, it's just, again, man, it just can't be more 80s than that.
Yeah. I mean, I so my wife watched like the last, I don't know, maybe like 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And of course she was just like on her phone, just like asking questions like, well, I mean, how many are there? Like, what are they? And it's like, it's hard to explain like an entire like franchise. So I literally caught myself saying, man, this is 80s gold, probably 10 times, just because it's like there's so many little things that have like, you know, but kind of like the arm wrestling thing, like that have sort of become like memes, you know, like,
yeah,
the get to the chopper, like that's,
yeah, sure,
you know, which I had forgotten, but he actually says that twice.
Yeah, no, I thought of it just like one time.
Me too. But yeah, it is 80s gold. One thing I have to say too, that, you know, and obviously as a kid seeing this, I never would have like appreciated this, but there is something about like the film and the like sort of exposure and like the color temperature. Mm-hmm. It's a very like sort of cool color temperature. Mm-hmm. So those shots that show, you know, you're in the jungle, so obviously it's always going to be, there's not a lot of like, you know, direct sunlight kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it always has this sort of cool kind of color temperature. And like that first scene, you know, when they flip off the lights in the chopper and they're getting ready to like drop into the jungle, when it shows those two black helicopters, you know, just as the sun's going down, it's just like the greatest, coolest. I don't know. There's something like so like epic, and it just feels like something about like the particular like color temperature and like the time of day that they filmed, it immediately felt so nostalgic for me.
Oh man, glad you brought that up, because I was gonna say, is there anything out there more iconic to you growing up in the 80s than, number one, any kind of montage, but certainly like Huey?
Oh yeah.
And if you don't know what a Huey is, look it up, but it's like I just call them like the Vietnam era helicopters flying in the air, and then the soundtrack being some sort of, honestly, it could be anything, but typically some sort of like
Rolling Stones,
classic rock. I mean, obviously Rolling Stones, they use Paint It Black a lot, or CCR, Fortunate Son is a popular one that they'll use. But dude, in this one, it was Long Tall Sally.
Yep.
Little Richard's version of it.
Mm-hmm. And gonna tell Aunt Mary about the joint.
Dude, it's so freaking bad to the bone. You're watching all these guys, like, it's this montage of them just kind of like getting prepped in this helicopter, riding to where they think, and we haven't mentioned this, but, you know, they're under the guy, or Arnold and his team are under they're like commandos that are, you know, coming to rescue some diplomats or something that have, you know, accidentally gone across the border. They think that they've been taken by this guerrilla army, these rebels. And so, but this montage, they're all like getting ready, you know, Jesse Ventura, this is where that joke is, you know, this kid's like talking to the Billy, the Native American guy, and he's like, hey man, my girlfriend, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make him laugh. Jesse Ventura is like, he asked this guy, I mean, again, this is this line, and I'm going to bleep out some of this stuff, but hopefully it'll illustrate just how 80, this is the 80s. This is a time machine into the 80s. Jesse Ventura's character is looking at this. He's probably the only like really like sort of skinnier dude on this team besides Billy, the Native American guy. And he like offers him some chewing tobacco.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, and he's like, oh God, what does he say? Hold on, I wrote it down. He says,
while you're doing that, you know that Shane Black, the director, is the little guy with the glasses.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
That's cool.
Pretty cool.
I wrote down in my notes like, well, okay, so long tall Sally, and then Dutch asks Carl Weathers, who's Dylan, he says, who's our backup? And Dylan says, no such thing, old buddy. This is a one-way ticket. And Arnold Schwarzenegger just like kind of grins and says, this is getting better by the minute. and then it pans over to the joke. Then you got Jesse Ventura's, what I called in my notes, the chew commercial, where he says, he's like, are you sure? It makes you a sexual tyrannosaur, which I'm not sure what that means, but hilarious. Mm-hmm. And then you've got Bill Duke, who is the kind of other, you know, token 80s black dude in the team. And he's dry shaving his face with a razor.
Yeah, I didn't.
Just like, look, just staring at the other guy, just like. And
so
it's just like,
one thing before you continue that I love, but I'm also kind of perplexed about is, I love the fact that like this movie is very much like approached almost as like a comic book or like a video game. So you have these like characters who are all like very different and kind of like quirky, you know, they have like their thing. And I really love that because it feels like, you know, it feels like the X-Men or like, you know, they kind of have their own thing, but I'm really perplexed by the shaving thing. I didn't understand that.
Well, dude, that's he's just trying to illustrate just how bad. See, he doesn't eat shaving cream.
Yeah, that's true. But he's got enough Vaseline.
He doesn't eat
on
anything.
His face.
Well, he's just so sweaty, man.
So sweaty.
But you know, and I mean, dude, they really are. I think they filmed it in
Guatemala.
Okay, they were, you know, in the heat. Apparently, there was a lot of things that kind of slowed up production. One of them being Montezuma's Revenge. A lot of them were sitting on the toilet for a lot of the downtime.
Yeah.
So some of them kind of got some stomach sickness and things like that. So here's what's cool about Bill Duke, and I didn't know this until we did this. He is a unique looking dude, and you would recognize him from so many 80s movies, but some that of course come to mind. It's interesting to note that he and Arnold both worked together on Commando.
Mm-hmm.
He was also in, you know, of course, Predator, but also Action Jackson, and Bird on a Wire, and a bunch of other stuff. And he's now gone on to create this production company, and has produced and done all this kind of stuff, and really kind of works a lot with like young African American talent as they come up to kind of give them a shot and stuff, which is super cool. And apparently, he's just like one of the nicest dudes in the world. And again, it kind of goes back to how hilarious it is that he's like, I mean, I don't, yeah, okay. I feel like so much of this movie was like sort of ad lib type stuff. It was on a pretty short, I mean, pretty small budget. I want to say it was like $15 million or something. They made this movie for $15 million.
Yeah.
Of course, they grossed a ton more. Yeah.
But also, I mean, what bang for your buck? $15 million, but then they also have, and we'll get into this later, they have a score and soundtrack from Alan Silvestri, who's legendary.
Yep.
And then they also have the special effects guy, Stan Winston.
Dude.
Which I want to get in more about that, which I didn't know. But after watching like the behind the scenes yesterday, there's some really cool stuff with that. But I mean, for $15 million, and you know, I mean, it was 1986, but still, like,
yeah,
it's pretty awesome.
And I love thinking about movies like this and the pitch meeting that must have come.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you walk into the thing and they're like, "We've got this idea. It's an invisible, or like it's like these guys in the jungle. They're just shooting a bunch of stuff. Who are they fighting? Invisible alien. Who's in it? Who do you want for it? Arnold Schwarzenegger." And they're like, "Let's do it." You know.
Well, one of the things too is like when I was a kid, all-time favorite action movie was Commando. And the interesting thing about this movie is it could actually sort of work chronologically.
Oh, yeah, dude.
I mean,
this would be almost like
Commando,
before, and then Commando would be after, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, like, I mean, or...
He's like retired, you know, he's trying to get away from it all.
Yeah.
As a kid, I think I kind of got him kind of confused a little bit, you know? I mean, again, we were like 6 and 7 when these movies came out. So I definitely didn't see this in the theater, but it was definitely a situation where, you know, you're over at somebody's house or somehow I'm sure somebody rented it and we're like, yeah, whoa, you know, I had to be like 8 when I first saw this. And another thing that I love about this movie is it doesn't waste a lot of time.
No.
Besides just like how long they sort of stay on that shot of them just air arm wrestling and just flexing those biceps.
Yeah.
Besides that, it doesn't really waste any time. Immediately, they're on a chopper, they're getting ready. And then also, dude, God, the hand signals that you can tell. They're like, yeah, just do some, like, I don't know, military hand signals.
Well,
and then Arnold does them, and it's like, oh, he did. What?
Yeah. So one thing that I was sort of surprised to learn is, as cheesy as that looks, they actually did have a special forces guy come in and stay with them the whole time to, like, sort of show them how to do that stuff. So I thought the same thing.
Guaranteed. It was a guy who, he was like the janitor of the army. And he was like, yeah, dude, I was in the, dude, you know, I can't tell you about all the stuff that I did, but I was in the special forces. And I, oh, dude, come show us the hand signals. And that's what we got, because those hand signals in no way mean anything.
Yeah. It's like the lady that, what was the story? It was a few years ago where a lady like scammed all these people by like getting into these like sort of big government like events.
Or what about the guy who was the sign language translator at Mandela's funeral? Doesn't know anything, dude.
That's
making
another one.
It up. I mean, like, it's so sad, but then also equally hilarious. You go back and watch this guy, and then like on, I think it was Kimmel or somebody had an actual person come in and translate the things this dude was actually saying.
Oh,
and dude, it is unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, wow.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Just look angry and move your arms around. I mean, come on. Okay.
Yeah, it definitely looked fake. And also, did you notice the amount of, I mean, and I'm not trashing on the movie because I think it's brilliant and I think it's exactly as it should be. I wouldn't take anything out. But there are like, it's weird to see because, you know, like I said, 1986, but it's weird to see like what now is so like commonplace where it's like there's like little bits of like humor. And I honestly, Shane Black, the director, is brilliant for this kind of thing. But at the time, I mean, this was kind of like a slightly like newer thing. And so the pacing is like really weird how, you know, they'll be in like the middle of like a huge sort of action sequence and it'll just be like the fastest, like little like quip, you know, Schwarzenegger's like little, like, you know, what
like
does he
one-liners?
Say? Yeah, like
his
little,
dude, he throws a freaking giant machete through somebody's body. The guy gets like kind of like impaled, and then like he's like up against this like bamboo wall, and he's like stick around.
And but like the timing of it is done like so fast that it's sort of like jarring. It's like
he kicks a door open, dude, in the same sequence.
Yeah.
Well, first, dude, we got to back up a little bit because before they get to this rebel base, they encounter this scene that I cannot believe I completely forgot about. And this was the moment, I think it's like 10 minutes into the film. This was the moment, maybe 15, where I decided I don't know that I can show this to my oldest just yet. So Billy, the Native American guy, who was actually one of my favorite characters even as a kid.
Yeah, me too.
You know, he's like an excellent tracker. So first he's, you know, they've been off of the copter now. They're in this jungle. Yeah, it's hot out there, but I don't know how hot. Apparently hot enough for Billy to, rather than use his canteen, he decides to just pull a vine down and chop it and drink from it. Well, while he's doing that, by the way, dude, I watched it with my headphones on because I wanted to hear, like, it's always interesting to me to hear, it wasn't a remastered version either, to hear the sound design for these movies. And they did something here that was exactly what we talked about last week in the episode,
what?
Where you know, you hear all these noises and everything. He chops the vine and everything goes quiet.
Oh.
And you kind of actually for the first time hear the, like, the predator, like, clicking. The,
like, clicking thing?
Just, but very, very faint and in the distance. Hmm. And Billy's kind of like, he notices the silence more than he hears, than he notices the clicking kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so he climbs up this area and he hears, like, these birds and stuff. And as an audience, you know, even this time, I'm like, wait, what does he find here? I don't remember. Well, he pulls back these leaves, and this is the scene that I was talking about, just completely forgetting. I'm not sure how or why, but there are these soldiers that have been, that are hanging upside down.
Yeah.
And they're skinned.
Yeah. It and they really, I mean, wow. The camera stays on it for a while.
Yeah, dude. And it doesn't look super fake. Anything. No. I mean, it's pretty realistic and intense.
Yeah. Agreed.
Anyhow. You know, he then kind of like uses his tracking skills to try to piece together what happened here. And I don't remember the line verbatim. I didn't write it down, but I thought it was cool as a kid, and I still think it's cool.
Jim Hopper.
Mac, cut him down.
I knew this man. Green Berets out of Fort Bragg.
Now, what the hell were they doing here?
I don't know, Dutch. This is inhuman. Nobody told me there was an operation in this area. They shouldn't have been here. Unless somebody sent them.
The gorillas skinned them? Why did they skin them?
Ain't no way for no soldier to die.
What happened here, Billy?
Strange, Major. There was a firefight. They were shooting in all directions.
Can't believe that Jim Hopper walked in an ambush.
I don't believe he did. I can't find a single track. It just doesn't make sense.
What about the rest of Hopper's men?
There's no signs. They never left here. Hell, it's like they just disappeared.
They find out, basically, that the people that were hanging were Green Beret soldiers, and they look at their dog tags, and one of them is a guy that Dutch knows. Dutch is, again, Arnold's character. And Dutch is talking to Billy, the Native American, and Billy is talking about how, you know, they were shooting in all directions, and Dutch says, I know Hopper, one of the guys that's hanging, skinned, wouldn't have walked into an ambush. Then Billy says,
I don't believe he did.
He says, how do you like that Billy voice? That was nice.
Very
good. He says, I can't find a single track. Just doesn't make sense. I mean, good God. Should I, like, if they do a video game version of this, should I be Billy?
Yeah.
So that was super cool to me then. But this is also the moment, folks. This is super exciting for me. This is the first time right after that that you see through the, it cuts to the perception of the predator. He's above them. You see the heat signatures of Arnold and Billy talking. You see it sort of like analyzing the voices and stuff. And it's just that's like the moment that you're like, whoa, what is this?
And I would imagine, like, you know, I don't particularly like remember how I felt like when I first, you know, saw the scene or whatever, but I would imagine, like, as an older, you know, like adult seeing this movie, you know, in the 80s for the first time, like that was probably pretty revolutionary, like the weird, like heat signature, like infrared kind of thing. And then you have like the, it's like the weird, like waveforms or like sound waves, you know, but they're done like vertically along the left side.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of make these weird, like, you know, sort of symbols, which kind of, you know, it's pretty consistent with like when he, you know, spoiler, when he sets off the bomb and it's showing like the, you know, the alien like numbers, I guess, like the countdown.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like that, which is interesting.
And again, before they get to this rebel base, they're kind of like walking around. There's already some tension between Arnold and Carl Weathers because basically Dylan, Carl Weathers, has lied to him. And so Arnold's like, what are we walking into here? Why did you lie to us? We can't trust you. Dylan actually works for the CIA, by the way. And so he's just kind of feeling like, you know, they're being set up in some way. So there's already some tension here. Well, Carl Weathers, like, they're going down this like hill or something. And I wrote this down because it was just, again, this comes back to so 80s, but then also hilarious. Carl Weathers like trips and makes a bunch of noise. And Bill Duke, the bad A black guy, mm-hmm. comes up all of a sudden out of nowhere and he says,
you're ghosting us, mother. I don't care who you are back in the world. You give up position one more time, I'll bleed you real quiet, leave you here. Got that?
And just walks off.
Oh, so it's fantastic. Awesome.
So
yeah. Yeah, he's got that. And it's funny because you really need to go look at the making of behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Because, like, just watching his, like, performances, I mean, really in all of his movies, but he has that, like, he sort of has that, like, sort of sunken eye thing. Mm-hmm. Like, he looks like he would just be, like, a horrible, you know, super rude dude. Mm-hmm. But then you hear him, like, on the behind the scenes, and he's, like, like you said, he's just, like, the nicest
yeah.
dude ever, you know?
I love that, man.
But, man, he does pull off that, like, you really, like, believe it, you know?
For sure. And speaking of one-liners, you know, we talked about when they get into this rebel base that, you know, just the ridiculous sort of tactics of how they do that. Arnold, like, you know, he's observing the base. He tells these guys to meet them. He slides down on his belly or something. Yeah. And then, like, gets to this truck that they've got sort of propped up so that they can use the engine, I guess, to run their generator. And
yeah,
he just, like, right. lifts the truck up because, you know, he's strong enough to do that. And yeah. It's just like another excuse to, like, just flex biceps.
Yeah.
And then he lifts the truck up, lets it down on the ground. The truck just drives off. And that's the diversion that he needs to go in there and just start kicking it.
I love, though, when that happens, then it shoots over to Jesse Ventura, like, looking through his binoculars, watching this truck just come barreling through the middle. And he's like, what the hell?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. And then the one-liners in this whole sequence are just amazing. You've got the stick around after he just impales a guy with his machete.
Yep.
And then he busts this door down. Mm-hmm. And when he does, right before he shoots, because there's plenty of time, he says, knock, knock. You've got Jesse Ventura, who is talking about these other guerrilla guys that they're kind of up on a hill or something. He's like, these SOBs are dug in like an Alabama tick, which mm-hmm. I thought that's a great, great line.
Yeah, that's a good one.
This other guy, I guess it might be the director, I think, or it might be this other dude. And he's like, you're bleeding, man, to Jesse Ventura. And Jesse Ventura, of course, says, I ain't got time to bleed.
Yeah.
Oh, so good, man.
Man, I mean, come to think of it, they use the word bleed a lot mm-hmm. in their like one-liners.
Yeah.
Which we're not there yet, but maybe my favorite, which is just the most classic sort of one-liner of the movie.
Well, now you got me perplexed, man.
If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Oh, yes.
That's the best.
Yes, okay. True, and it's kind of perfect timing because...
We'll return after these messages.
It's a pretty cool place. If you're a Martian.
Or a vampire. Or a vampire.
You think you really know what's happening around here, don't you?
Fighters for truth, justice, and the American way.
Hey, this is Woody.
And this is Tyler. And you're listening to That Would Be Rad.
And now, back to our show. This is about the time in the movie when we get this other famous scene. Because so many of these scenes to me, man, tell me if you're like this as well. I remember them in like huge chunks, right? I remember mm-hmm. whenever they attack the base. I remember the helicopter sequence. I remember Billy kind of like staring off and being like, you know, kind of starting to figure out that something's not right. I remember this next part where they hear some noise or something, they get spooked and they just all, oh, that's what it is. I think someone gets taken, right? And killed. Yeah. And they all just start like shooting. I don't think it's Carl Weathers, right? It might be Jesse Ventura's character.
Oh, he's got the Gatling gun?
Yeah, and they just start, like, shooting into the woods, like, ah, and they shoot for, like,
is awesome.
Dude, there's no way they had enough ammo to shoot for 10 minutes straight, but they made it that way.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. One thing before we get to that, for some reason, I didn't remember them sort of sneaking in and like taking out like the gorilla village.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't remember any of that.
I just remember because there was like a girl.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I thought they just sort of like, you know, came upon her like somewhere in the forest. But it is interesting that you said that because I was thinking the same thing. It really does feel like several different movies into one. So you have your first sort of montage kind of like setup sequence, you know, the chopper and then, you know, the getting to know you section. And then you have like another action movie on its own where they're doing like the raiding the village or whatever. And then it's like, then it switches to like the hunter being the hunted where it's this like, you know, it's very much based on like you seeing from the perspective of the predator.
Yeah.
Which is awesome because it really does give that like feeling of, it's just like the sort of intensity and the like sort of anxiousness, if you will, is kind of like
the suspense and stuff.
Yeah, suspense. It just builds and builds and builds like all the way to the end, which is really awesome.
And it's neat too because you rarely get to see through like that perspective within the same movie. So for example, like the suspense in the Alien franchise is so different because it's just you're with the people being hunted by the alien and you never really get to see through its eyes, right? And then so they're building that suspense from like, oh gosh, when is it going to pop out?
Yeah.
With Predator, it's like you get to see it sneaking up on these guys and it's just a matter of time that it attacks, you know, and it's just this apex predator, man, that literally is just insanely strong and stuff. I loved that too, man, because that flip when now they're sort of slowly being picked off.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, they go into this like rampage where I think somebody died. This is where like the gore comes in. Like whatever that sort of, I don't even know what kind of weapon it is. I didn't do my homework there, but like a shockwave gun or something just slices through Jesse Ventura and this other dude's head explodes. And
oh,
like,
yeah, yeah. It's his like little shoulder mounted
cannon thing
or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And I never realized this, but every time he turns his head, it like turns with him.
Mm. Oh, yes, cool. yes. I remember that. Yeah. Kind of like, and like of course, the iconic triple laser.
You know what's weird though? I don't remember this scene, and I don't know how this works, but, you know, when it shows, like, his, like, crosshairs, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Visually, like, I guess it's kind of like CGI, where it sort of shows it sort of, like, working, you know? Like, it shows, like, all the different lines kind of, like, connecting, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That was really cool, but the one scene that I didn't understand is when you first see him, like, he sort of ejects his Wolverine, like, blades.
Yeah.
And then he's like looking at the blades with his like targeting and they're like glowing red. Like,
yeah, I don't know.
Like it's like some kind of like heat vision type thing.
I don't know.
I didn't understand that part.
I don't know. I might have to rewatch it again, which is exciting.
I do want to watch the second one.
Oh, no, you don't.
No?
Oh, it's so terrible, dude. I tried. Yeah, I got about, I mean, I gave it a real, real good try. I got like, 3/4 of the way in. So terrible.
Man.
I mean, you have to, and I'm going to finish it.
Yeah.
But it's in comparison to this, like this literally might be, as I was thinking about it, you know, this week, it is certainly top 10 of all time for me.
Oh,
It very well might be the movie. I thought, you know, I used to, you know, there's no way it could dethrone like the Goonies or any of the Star Wars movies, but in terms of how many times I've watched it, but it's up there, dude.
Yeah.
You know, it was that movie that I could just put in and just watch. It's so cool. It just makes you feel, it makes you just feel like a kid again because you can remember how ridiculous and over the top, and it's just kind of checking all the boxes, just like badassery.
Yeah, yeah right.
And you just, you know, this is the movie that, this is like the grown-ups G.I. Joes kind of in a way. Like you got to see all these guns and cool explosions in action as a little kid. and they're fighting this like evil alien. And we're not even, I mean, we haven't even talked yet about, finally it dwindles down and they notice that, you know, because when they go into this rampage and they're shooting in all directions, and there's this famous scene where the sort of minigun that now Bill Duke is holding because he's pissed that his buddy Jesse Ventura's character, who was like the weapons specialist or whatever, he gets killed, and Bill Duke's just like, wah! and then finally all the ammo's done,
the
and
noise
it's still going,
yeah,
still spinning,
yeah.
Oh, dude, it's yeah, so cool.
I put that in my notes. It's such a, like, what Woody's talking about is, you know, the Gatling gun like spinning, so it's out of bullets, and he's still holding it, so it's like, it's the metal on metal is still sort of like whirring or whatever. Yeah, it's this weird like sort of dissonant. I mean, I guess technically it would be like two notes sort of layered on top of each other. So it creates this weird like uncomfortable, which again, like even builds the suspense even more, you know, because he's like, he starts to kind of go off the rails, Bill Duke, which is awesome to see. But you know that like he's just like, kind of out of it, you know. He's sort of in shock.
He's in like a what do they call it? Like a blood rage or a what's it called, man? Like a,
you're talking about like the D&D thing?
No, well, in real life too, it's rage? Like a, well, kind of. I mean, it's just like he's just going. I don't know. He's just like
bloodlust.
Bloodlust. That's it, man. He's out for revenge. This thing killed his friend. You know, his companion, his buddy. That, you know, that's another great thing you mentioned earlier was like, this is one of those movies, for the first time that I can remember really, where this team that are going after this thing, unfortunately not all of them survive, but they're all awesome. It's like a gang. It's like us versus them. And you and I have always loved that thing. That's why we like the Rolling Stones. It's what we, you know, try to create even within our band and stuff, wherever we went. And so I love that aspect of it. But to see him kind of getting into the dark depths of his own soul and just kind of being fearful, but also just so angry, adds this really cool element to it. And I feel like this director also used even that whirring gun as another character or an element that he could sort of use to portray that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this is kind of coming up to the scene also where, you know, it's that classic scene where you see Bill Duke, his character, like shaving, and he's just kind of so out of it and so sort of, you know, like in a, it's kind of like a psychotic break, really. And like he's pressing so hard that he's digging the razor into his skin until it breaks.
Yep.
And he doesn't even realize it, which really does like show just like the power of like, you know, 80s. I mean, it's just the most over the top thing, but it's like, as a kid, I can specifically remember, you know, anytime you were playing like, you know, guns or whatever you would call it.
Yeah.
You know, at some point you would always be like, yeah, and then I have a Gatling gun.
Oh,
and
yeah, dude.
That was just part of 80s action movies, you know.
For sure. Like, this is the movie that I'm sure when James Cameron saw this gun and Arnold on the same screen, basically, he was like, we got to have that in Terminator. And like, as a kid, that's the only, those two movies was the reason why you're just like, I got to have a Gatling gun toy.
Yeah.
Never had one. But, you know, we'd pretend.
You know, another movie that I thought of as I was watching this last night, because it just started bringing back so many sort of memories of being a kid, like, and watching this. It does kind of give you that vibe of, I don't know, there was something that was so cool about, like, action movies that were, like, sort of military-based in the 80s. Specifically, I'm thinking of, like, Aliens. You know, it's like all the like call signs and sort of like the military like slang and stuff. Like, it just, like, as a kid, I mean, it's probably the, you know, the military industrial complex like doing it all purposefully. But like, it really did make you want to be like, man, I want to get out there. I got to join the army.
Well, it's funny too, because it's hard for us to like think about it since we grew up during that time. But, you know, when these movies came out, you're only talking like less than 20 years from like Vietnam.
Yeah, right.
And so like even just the thought of military had changed so much. God, especially if you compare it to like now, we'll say, you know, you're in an airport. I don't know if listener, you guys do this, but I'll walk up to a soldier that I see and just say, hey man or ma'am, thank you for your service. You know, that kind of stuff didn't, this time period when this movie came out and all this, there was still some pretty high tension, man. Cold War was going on. You've got, like, you know, you're coming off of people's perspectives of the military from Vietnam, but also, like, you know, other conflicts in between there, some, like, Contra stuff and, like, all these, yeah, like, rumblings of the military being used sort of behind the scenes and black ops and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you've got all these movies, though, whereas, like, as a kid, you're not really concerned about the political ramifications, right, of things and stuff. You don't really care. Who cares? Let's watch some freaking dudes, you know, mowing a jungle down with big, yeah, machine guns, dude, you know? And it's just, oh, it's so good. It's just so cool.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the big takeaway from this movie for me was, like, it just feels like almost like a video game. It's not trying to be something that it's not. There's not like, I don't know. I feel like modern movies, and I mean even movies like in the 80s as well, would try to do this, where there's all these like multiple like sort of plot lines, and it's, mm-hmm, like it's sort of overcomplicated. So it, sure, gets like, you know, everything is just a little like overcooked. Mm-hmm. This movie just feels like a video game. It's like, hey, we have all these ripped dudes. We have guns. We have an alien with like this like suit and weapons. And we want to throw them out in the, you know, the Guatemalan jungle. And, mm-hmm, like, that's it.
Yeah.
Like, that's why it has that rewatchability factor, because there's not all these, like, other things that you're keeping up with. It's like, hey.
They don't even get into, besides the spaceship thing, they don't even get into the lore of this creature,
all,
dude. They have completely simplified it so much.
Exactly.
But not in a bad way to me. I feel like any added sort of plot would just be, it would actually take away from the greatness of the movie, like you're saying.
I think so too. Yeah.
You know, and it's like they don't waste any time.
Yeah. Like if this was made today, there would be a subplot showing, like, you know, the whoever general like approved this like rogue group, and he would be fighting in Washington. It would just be so like overcooked. But I, what you said is like, that's really important, because I think part of the reason that the sort of the suspense factor works so well and that constant build is partially because you only know as much as they know. Like, yeah, it's not, you know, other than like seeing the, like the little ship, like the pod shoot off, mm-hmm, you know, you don't know anything about the
what
alien
it looks
either.
Like. What you know, what does it do? Like, why is it here?
Right.
There's so many mysterious aspects of it that I think too were part, probably just like a consequence of like the low budget. I mean, I think what I read was even the heat vision thing, mm-hmm, it was easier for them and cheaper for them to show that more often than it was like the glimmer of, mm, whenever, yeah, he's like invisible and or when Harry's in the suit and all that.
Yeah.
But that unintended consequence makes for such a cool vehicle that they can use for that suspense factor, man.
Oh,
just,
yeah.
Oh, dude, it's just so freaking cool. And we're not, like, I had to ask myself, is this where my love for, like, neon came from?
Well, one thing that I thought of is, you tell me, like, I challenge you to tell me of one young boy in the 80s that wasn't obsessed with Predator,
yeah,
that did not at one time crack open one of those glow sticks.
Oh, yeah, dude.
And pretend that it was Predator blood.
Oh, for sure.
Multiple times.
Everyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, who knows if it's dangerous for your skin? Had it on my skin.
Absolutely is. Real quick before, yeah, and this is kind of, you know, kind of behind the scenes. I don't know if we would get into this. One thing that's really cool is originally this movie or the screenplay was called The Hunter or Hunter. The cool thing about it, and I think part of the reason that this got made was, and their last name was Thomas, the two Thomas brothers who wrote the treatment and the screenplay snuck onto the Fox lot.
Okay.
And then slid it under some executive's door. So when they showed up on Monday morning, it was there. And that's
jeez,
how we have,
dude,
the movie. Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible, man.
Yeah.
It's, I love, amazing, stories like that.
Yeah.
So anyhow, we end up seeing they wound the Predator, okay? And he leaves behind this like neon blood. And that's when your favorite line comes in, when Arnold says,
"If it bleeds, we can kill it."
Which just imagine being in their shoes. What a cool thing. And then that's when, again, it flips again to now Arnold's mission is to get everyone to the chopper.
Oh, yeah.
Because now they've got like a chopper that's supposed to pick them up. They've got an LZ, a designated LZ, a landing zone.
Yeah.
And that's where he wants everybody to go. But in the meantime, he's going to MacGyver the heck out of some stuff.
Yeah.
And he's going to, now he's going to turn the tables.
Well, they kind of have two of those montages.
Yeah.
Like the first one is like when, I mean,
spoiler. Other people are still alive.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's like the whole crew is kind of setting up like traps and stuff for it. Which, by the way, concerning like the invisibility, the cloaking thing, kind of like what I said before, you know, that's why we're talking about this movie now, is because that effect, you know, sort of gave a baseline to these weird sightings in the real world. But one thing that I did not remember is like, for some reason, visually, I don't ever remember it looking like that as a kid. I like looking at it now, it's almost like a topographic map. Have you noticed that, where it has like those like sort of concentric like rings within it? Like you see these, it's almost,
I remember
like,
it looked a lot different than I remembered, and kind of a little bit. Yeah. I see where, yes. Okay.
It's like different layers. It's like, you know, working its way in.
Yeah.
But I don't remember. And it almost looks like, it's almost like you're like duplicating itself. So if you're standing in front of like a leaf, it would be like leaf. Like I don't remember that as a kid for some reason.
It
visually looked different in my mind.
Yeah. Same.
But it was, I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, man. So anyhow, and again, I don't really know if we were just going straight through the whole plot. I mean,
let's do it.
So basically, now we'll just fast forward to Arnold's the only one left. And besides, I guess, the woman who is just ahead, which that this is the one area where, you know, initially, again, rewatching, I thought, well, maybe I forgot. There is no nudity in this movie, which is surprising because I'm not sure why. And this is going to sound potentially, I don't know, rude, but like I never really understood the purpose of the female character that they find, other than just having like a civilian that they need to save.
Nope, I can tell you. Exactly. So just like you as a kid, it just didn't make sense to me. Yeah. It was like,
In other words, as an adult, I'm thinking, okay, well, she's about to get naked.
Right. No, I know exactly why. And I totally did not remember this, but this is actually probably one of my favorite parts about the movie. You know, it sort of ticks that box of like anthropology and like folklore, that kind of stuff that we talk about a lot, which we love. The whole MacGuffin for her being in it is so that she could finally give that like that little speech explaining how the old women in the town would talk about this thing that would come in the years that it was like very hot.
Oh, and, I totally missed that.
Dude. Yeah. And they would find the men in the village like gutted, you know, and butchered out in the jungle. And it only happened in like the hot years, which is kind of weird. She calls it a demon. I thought that was really cool. And I completely forgot about it. But I think now watching back, it's like, oh man, that's cool. Cause it shows that like, oh, this thing is like, this is like a reoccurring thing where this thing's coming to an unknown planet, or like a, you know, coming from another planet, we suspect. And, you know, it sort of, it's almost like it's, I don't know. I would almost imagine it as like this predator's like vision quest, or it's like, you know, becoming
coming of
a man
age. Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah. And so it's like dropped off on this planet to show that it's the apex predator kind of thing.
Man, super cool.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. And I'd completely forgot about it, but it just, that little scene kind of totally explains, like, you know, the movie Prey. It explains like, oh, these things have been coming here. And I don't really understand like the hotter the years that it's really hot. I don't understand that.
Well, I guess maybe because like if they're using that heat vision, maybe it gives your body heat, maybe it just gives off more during those times. I don't know.
Actually, that makes pretty good sense.
Of course, now Arnold is kind of just, this kind of goes back into another final really the final iconic sequence, which is when it's just him against the alien. He's like set up this trap and stuff. He figures out by accident that because he's covered in mud that it can't see him. In fact, like it goes right by him.
Yeah.
And I'm sure watching it the first time, this moment is just extremely suspenseful. Now, you know, having watched it a million times.
Hold on, Woody.
We will return after these messages.
America's future can be determined by our dreams and our visions.
It was very intense, bright light.
For over 200 years, there have been reports of giant, man-like creatures.
From another dimension, another world, I don't know.
The most intriguing mystery on the North American continent.
This is Joshua Cutchin, and you're at my home for weirdness. That would be rad.
What, sweetie?
But also, I watched the movie, and I don't recommend.
Okay.
I was forced to watch the movie. I feel like I should have some kind of little input here. Don't watch the movie. It's stupid. It's a waste of time.
It's not stupid.
Visual effects, 0 out of 10.
1986.
Acting, 2 out of 10. I'll give Arnold a little bit of help.
Did she watch the arm wrestling scene?
Predator.
No, she missed the arm wrestling scene.
Predator, apparently, in the end, developed a personality and starts laughing.
Laughing. Like, oh, yeah.
Darth Vader.
Yeah.
That was stupid.
Okay,
well, it was because
okay.
It was like, it's the recording.
Know my opinion as well.
Oh, okay. Love you. Get out of here.
Love you, bye. Since I was forced to watch it.
It's the recording of that guy laughing or whatever. It's Billy laughing at the second joke that the dude tells. And then the Predator.
Is that what that was?
Yeah, dude. The Predator like has been gathering all these like sound bites.
Which, by the way, I mean, I'm sure you picked up on this. What was the first thing you thought of when you heard that?
Yeah, man. Disembodied voices.
Tim Marchenko.
Yeah, dude.
I mean, I feel like we bring up this guy and his book, Disembodied Voices. We need a bell to ring every time we say it. Oh, I didn't realize. And we're kind of jumping ahead, but like the laugh at the end when he sets off the detonation sequence.
Wait, hold on. So Arnold is covered in mud. He's now figures out that the Predator cannot see him. In fact, he like even says it after, just in case as an audience, you didn't realize that the Predator literally just like almost climbs over him to he's looking for him. And Arnold just kind of like goes, "It didn't see me."
well, hold on. Let me go back a little bit. So here's one of the things that I think it sort of took me out a little bit as like, oh, okay, this is like straight up 80s. The one thing that you, as far as, you know, movies like holding up, the one thing about 80s movies in particular is like, I guess back then we had a much larger attention span. So whether it's like just a single shot or like a little sequence, boy, they'll milk it to death.
Right.
And nowadays, like we don't have that attention span. So everything's a lot faster. But the one thing about this movie that took me out is, and this sort of facilitates the mud scene, but like when Arnold like falls into the water,
yeah,
it shows him literally go over two waterfalls. And it's just, it's like, what are they doing? Why did we need to see that? Yeah. But then you think like, oh, well, I mean,
you know how it is. I bet like whenever they film this, they're like, yeah, but dang it, man, that sequence is really cool. Which one should we do? Well,
this is
I like them both. Let's just do them both.
Well, you know? So the whole reason that it's there is he's like sliding down this hill and it's this massive like drop into the water. I'm talking skyscraper drop into the water. And then he does that and he's just like struggling to swim. And then you see his eyes widen and he's like, oh God, there's another one. And it shows like the far off shot or the pulled back shot of another waterfall. And it just continues on. But I will say like what was cool, one of my other favorite parts about that movie is when, you know, he's finally like swimming, he's all like worn out, he's like in the mud and he like lays his head on the, you know, the shore where the mud is. And, you know, he's like climbing up and then you see the splash in the water behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, this is cool. Like,
yeah, dude,
you know, because the Predator was like following after him, you know,
the only thing that does sort of like illustrate well is like he's just getting beat up, dude. Like he's probably landing on rocks and he's just like beat all the hell. He's tired. Mm-hmm. Now he's covered in mud. predator doesn't see him, so he uses that to his advantage. And then he kind of sets up this like booby trap situation. But dude, when he's calling the predator to him, do you remember this sequence?
Yeah.
He does this like primal.
When he's like,
yeah.
Rah, rah, rah,
and yeah. It just like echoes through the jungle. Yeah. So bad.
Which, by the way, we did jump a little bit. I do kind of want to go back. So the guy Poncho, mm-hmm. he was probably one of my favorite characters. The one thing that bugs me about this movie, and this is like probably my biggest critique about this movie. I'm cool with like all the acting. I feel like the setup for these characters, like Billy, for example, is the perfect example. He's this like sort of, you know, quintessential like Indian character. So yeah. It's like, you know, as we all know, being kids in the 80s and even earlier, is that like, oh, well, they're sort of Indians are sort of tapped into like the spiritual plane. So they, you know, call it intuition, call it like whatever. It's like they kind of know when something's up. And so the whole movie, he's kind of like looking off and he's scared and they're like, he ain't scared of nothing. And so you know that like, oh, this is like something serious. And I love when they're like, oh, well, Billy ain't scared of no man. And he's like,
It ain't no man.
Yeah. And he's like, we're all going to die.
Yeah.
That's such a great scene. But when they're finally crossing the bridge, you know, somebody else dies in the crew. Oh, I think it was Bill Duke's character dies. And you hear like screaming off and they're crossing this tree. And Billy knows like, okay, they need to get to the helicopter. It's time to fight. And he like pulls his shirt off. He throws his gun in the water. He rips like his necklace off, which is like his like, you know,
medicine
prayer
bag, kinda, yeah.
Or like charm bag. Yeah. Rips that off. And you know that like, okay, he's going at it like old school, you know, like his ancestors would have fought. It's just such an awesome like buildup. And then it's like immediately you just hear him like scream in the background and he's dead.
Yeah, and what happens to him in the background is the other iconic gnarly scene that scarred my wife for life, which is the predator just like pulls out he like rips his spine out of his body and is just holding the spine and the head in some high up tree branch.
Which that kind of came a little bit later. It sort of like cuts back to that where he's way up in a tree. And it is pretty gruesome, like when he rips the spine out. But to me, the more jarring part is when you just see, and it looks like it's just his like upper torso just be thrown out of the tree.
Yeah.
Which is like, ugh. But I think like that's the one thing that if I had my way that should be changed is just like you have these killer characters and they have these awesome like kind of like buildups. And then, or even like with Poncho, it's like the trap goes off and it's like the big tree branch falls and like hits him in the chest and I don't know. Their deaths were just like kind of a little lackluster.
That is the one area where I guess maybe they could have spent a little bit more time. Mm-hmm. Maybe not two waterfalls. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Now, I love the Native American aspect and how it ends up sort of leading into the rest of the franchise, not just the movies, but in like, you know, comic books and things like that. They really kind of pick it up. But before we get to that stuff,
well, hold on. You have like the second montage of the movie, which if you could put the 80s and like that feeling of like the montage, I mean, I don't know, Rambo's pretty good when it shows the, you know, pulling his headband from behind. But that montage where he's like setting all these like traps and he's like somehow made a bow and arrow out of like vines. Mm. That part is amazing because he's all like caked in like mud. One thing that I did discover on the behind the scenes is, you know, that was like modeling or like ceramic or like clay.
Yeah. I heard
that. And he was constantly almost in a hypothermic state.
Yeah, because they filmed that portion in the winter or something.
Yep, and it was like one of the coldest years, you know, that they had as far as that. So he's constantly wet. They couldn't give him like a heater because then it dried out the mud and right. then became brittle and would like crack off, you know, and he would move.
It's dedication.
They would give him like Jaeger shots to keep him like nice. Internally
artificially and so warm.
The,
yeah.
So the whole time it's like that you're watching this, it's like he was probably, you know, almost drunk the whole time.
No wonder he's so good at the primal yell.
Yeah, right. I agree. But,
go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say about that, like primal yell, that particular scene, there were a couple shots when it shows that, and then it shows like the predator like shooting his the shoulder blaster into the woods that, I mean, they would hold up today as far as like epic, like wide anamorphic film shots.
Yeah.
It just, they look so epic and so like big in scale that like, it's really impressive, that little sequence.
Yeah, I agree, man.
Really cool.
Well, I mean, a lot of that stuff, I feel like, yeah, okay, it's not all perfect, but here's the thing. Back then, mm-hmm. they used, it wasn't CGI. It was all practical. Yeah. And yep. so, like, they had to use what they had on hand. And to me, man, I just feel like they did just an outstanding job for the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's amazing. I mean, we're getting real in the weeds on the plot here, but
no, I mean, I think it's cool.
Ultimately, I think too, like once it goes to where it's more like one-on-one, him mm-hmm. versus the predator, it really kind of ramps up into the final sort of conclusion. But one part that I always forgot, so like by the end of it, he, you know, defeats the predator. Spoiler alert, he defeats the predator, right?
Yeah.
Well, technically speaking, the predator kind of defeats himself. You know, he kind of does like a self-destruct bomb,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's true.
And he's like laughing. And, you know, this is after we are now able to see like what's under the mask, which, again, typically I'm pretty disappointed. A lot of times there's like an alien reveal. Dude, I remember thinking this as a kid. It was like, I don't know how they came up with this.
Same.
Where it's sort of like animalistic. There's something extremely sort of, well, I mean, like beastly and primal about the way it looks under there. It's got the cool mouth that opens up.
Oh, the like mandibles.
Yeah, I mean, dude.
And you hear this weird like clinking of like the teeth.
Yeah, man, it's so intense. And and then
Winston,
you know, then it like explodes. And then, but what I always kind of forgot, especially because like I'm like, well, why didn't he ever come back? I thought maybe he was so wounded that when he finally gets to the chopper that he like dies or something. I actually had to look that up because I was like, did that character die? Mm-hmm. The answer is no, he didn't. He just hasn't appeared in any of the other movies. Thank God for Arnold. I'm sure he read those scripts and was like, nah.
Yeah, I mean, that whole sort of extraction sequence, I mean, that's kind of what I meant earlier by like, the movie's not trying to do be anything that it's not.
Yeah.
And I think, like, it is funny because the get to the chopper, that, like, meme is actually the whole movie. It's just him getting to the chopper, and then there's no sort of, like, closure. There's no, it explodes, you know, the predator explodes. You see a giant, like, mushroom cloud in the distance as the helicopter's, like, coming in to get him. And then next shot, you see Arnold on the chopper. You see a pulled out shot of the choppers like heading off into the horizon. And then that's it. There's
that's
no
it. Blank screen. I was like, oh, is there like some sort of like cliffhanger, you know, bonus scene or something that's going to jump out? Like maybe you hear the alien. Nope.
Yeah. And then what's even funnier than that is like, not only does it not have like a resolve, it then immediately goes into showing these like candid, like thumbs up smile shots. Of all like the main
of
characters.
All the, yes, dude. Hilarious.
Which was awesome. Yeah. It's like TV sitcom style.
One thing I definitely want to make sure that we get to, we got to talk a little bit about the suit itself of the Predator. And one of the things that like we discovered over the last, you know, couple months or whatever, but certainly like in doing this recap of the movie. Mm-hmm. And man, it's just so hilarious. So Jean-Claude Van Damme was actually originally cast to be the actor in the Predator suit. And you can go and you can actually watch test footage, and there's this like terrible design, sort of like, it doesn't even look like the final suit. It's just, it almost looks like some sort of praying mantis or something. It's like pink and he's just wearing it. It's just like a test suit, right?
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought this up. On the behind the scenes, it explains this. So their visual effects guy, they had a different guy other than Stan Winston before. Mm. And so the original suit, when they sent it in, they said everybody on the set was like, oh, boy.
Yeah, it looks rough.
Yeah, and so it's like bright red, weird, bulky. It doesn't look – and so they were running out of money, and the guy ends up calling like some executive at Fox and was like, we can't have this. And he was like, oh, what do you mean? We have – you know, this guy's an amazing visual effects guy, you know, whatever. And so they shot one scene with this suit. They sent it to him. And he was, and even though they were completely out of money at this point, they were like, yeah, we can't make that happen. And so so there was like this huge like delay in filming, which was like, you know, a month or so, where they had to coordinate, and they ended up finally approving more budget so that then they could bring in Stan Winston. And
thank God, because there's no way this movie would have been even close to as iconic as it ended up with, you know, that first thing. So anyway, though, this is amazing that Jean-Claude, and it gets even more amazing when you like learn a little bit more about it. He was originally in it, okay? Mm-hmm. And apparently one of the other things that held up production is that he would constantly, first he was like always pissed off and complaining about how hot it was. It's just too hot.
Yeah.
In the suit. And he would pass out sometimes. Oh, and then also, here's the best part, dude. And this, when I read this, I almost fell out of my chair. Part of the thing that would just like interrupt production is he would not stop. He would not stop kickboxing people in the scenes. Like, it's not in the script. It's not written that way. He would just be like, what? Are you coming? You know? And then the director would get pissed at him and he'd say, I'm telling you, there's got to be some kickboxing in this movie. You know?
Oh, God.
And they would be like, no, dude, no, listen, hey, we appreciate
you're an
it, but
alien.
Like, we, the reason why we hired you is because we think, you know, your martial arts skills and stuff will really kind of bring some like movement to the creature that is going to make it more like, you know, an apex predator that can like sneak around ninja style and all this. And they would, you know, they would call action and stuff. And then he'd kickbox whoever he was in the scene with, dude. And so here's another part. So that was one reason that was just getting on their nerves. The other was he was up against and standing next to these people that, you know, Jesse Ventura, Arnold Schwarzenegger, they're way bigger and taller.
Yeah, they're all like 6 foot two, six foot four.
And he's like 5'9". Mm-hmm. So ultimately they're like, he wasn't a good fit. And, you know, but you got to look up these production photos where he's in this costume. He just looks pissed off. And then like the footage, dude, the footage is incredible because you can tell, oh, he's about to do a freaking kick. And then they cut away.
Here's the split.
Yeah.
Now, was he there like wearing like the new suit?
No.
It was the old one.
Actually, I think I may have seen a picture of that. But no, the footage, though, shows him in that like stupid pink one. But listen to this, too. Okay, so the guy that they actually got.
Now, Kevin Peter Hall.
Kevin Peter Hall, mm-hmm. who, by the way, is 7'2" tall.
7'3".
7'3" tall. Okay? Yeah. Now, you wouldn't know Kevin Peter Hall, you know, by, I guess, if he passed you on the street, other than just the enormous height, right?
Yeah.
Except that he was in another iconic 80s movie playing a character that we all know and love. Mm-hmm. That's Harry and the Hendersons.
Yep.
Incredible.
Oh, and don't forget Mazes and Monsters.
Man.
Yeah.
Here's some details about the actual final costume. And I just can't even believe this. And I'm sure they mentioned it in the behind the scenes, Tyler, but I just had to write this down. The costume itself weighed over 200 pounds.
Wow.
Kevin Peter Hall had to be connected to a rig of these like bungees and pulleys so that he could move more fluidly and realistically.
Wow.
And so every time we see this stuff going on, and apparently it was like very, very hot in there and everything. Mm-hmm. Again, they ended up shooting this stuff in the heat. And then I think they had to do reshoots with Arnold. I don't know if it was because of the kickboxing, but in the jungle by himself when it's one-on-one with the predator. Mm-hmm. And so that's just another reason why they decided to do more of the heat vision stuff is just like, man, we've got this rig that we have to do just to make this guy move around when we're showing him that. Why don't we come up with another way, which I think is brilliant, to show that that character's there without having him actually have to be there physically moving around.
Man, that's cool. Yeah, one thing about him is not only was he 7'3", he was also a like ballet and martial arts expert.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool, yeah.
I remember vaguely when we talked about this earlier, you mentioned, when, before we started recording, you mentioned the legendary sort of bicep competition
that was
going on between Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jesse Ventura, and I'm sure whoever else wanted to measure biceps.
Mm-hmm.
I told you not to tell me because I remember that there was that, but I don't remember what the outcome was, so go for it.
Yeah, so apparently, you know, if you're familiar with the movie, like the whole cast, I mean, even like the skinnier guys like Bill and Poncho, like your skinnier guys, even they're like still pretty ripped. And so, yeah. You know, there was this constant competition, especially with like Carl Weathers, Jesse Ventura, Arnold Schwarzenegger, especially with like your bigger dudes where they were always like in the gym, like, you know, pumping iron. And so like there was this like, this constant sort of competition where Arnold apparently like went in and like told like the costume director or like set supervisor or whatever that to tell Jesse Ventura that, you know, when they're measuring for like, you know, his shirts and stuff, that he had like 3 extra inches on his bicep than Arnold. And so then, you know, you have Jesse Ventura just riding a high because he thinks like, man, I've done it. I've put in the work and I'm bigger than, you know, the muscles from Brussels.
Yeah.
That is
Van Damme, isn't it?
Wait, what was Schwarzenegger's name?
He's from Austria, but
yeah, but that was like, he had like a nickname. I can't remember. Anyway, then they went in and one of them like made a bet or something. I can't remember the details, but they made a bet that like whoever, you know, $1,000 or $500 or something.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, Arnold had like the bigger biceps. And so, you know, it was just this constant like competition between, you know, these muscle bound dudes, which
is
pretty 80s too. One thing that's really cool that I think is worth adding is so the music and the score was Alan Silvestri. He is a total legend. I would say, you know, he would be in like the top 5 of all time. You know, did the whole Back to the Future trilogy, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Forrest Gump, The Polar Express, you know, The Abyss, The Mummy, Mummy Returns, like Avengers, Avengers Endgame, Avengers Infinity War, Tales from the Crypt, a ton of like, you know, stuff that when we think of like a score, we think, oh, wow, that's like classic. You know, he was kind of like another John Williams.
Yeah, he's the guy that if you're like listening, you're like, now, did John Williams do this one?
Exactly.
He's the guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. If you look it up, 80s classic like film scores, if you don't see John Williams' name, you see Alan Silvestri.
Right.
One thing about Stan Winston is he, you know, visual effects guy, he is like the guy. Like he did all the Terminator stuff, all the Alien stuff. He did Batman Returns, you know, like the Danny DeVito, the Penguin sort of costume. He just legendary, you know, all the Jurassic Park stuff, all the Predator movies, Edward Scissorhands, and the list just like goes on and on and on. He was constantly working with like James Cameron, Spielberg, and Tim Burton. And so, you know, even though it was kind of like the early days for a lot of these guys, you know, they would go on to be just legends in the field, which is cool. Yeah. And even Shane Black, the director, he did Monster Squad.
Man.
He did, you know, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Iron Man 3, which that's okay, but like Commando, you know, he's all these, like, it really was sort of the perfect culmination of like some of the world's greatest talents, you know, all kind of thrown into one. And it is funny to think of in a movie that, you know, like I've said multiple times in this episode, in a movie that really is pretty simple. It's literally a video game put on the screen.
Right.
It's cool that they were able to like make all those guys. It's just a perfect combination of of talent all in one movie. So.
Agreed. Yeah. And it's one of those things that I feel like, look, there's a lot of great talent in the visual effects area nowadays and the usage of computer graphics and, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I really hope that there's a resurgence of talent in the practical effects area because...
I agree.
You know, I don't know, man. There's so many times that I miss that, you know. A perfect example, well, and I couldn't even finish it, but we started watching the newest Ant-Man or whatever, Quantumania. And
I liked it.
I feel like the acting was awful. And then also really? Like, oh, we're in front of a green screen constantly. Yeah. I just can't, you know, like.
Well, I will say, I feel like if any movie you kind of, I mean, because it's a completely, you know, sort of new world building.
Yeah, I know, but like didn't need it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, they and are so, like the we're quantum. Creating this quantum realm and we can only use the green screen. But why don't you just not make the movie?
Well, no. I will say I do think a lot of practical effects were used in a lot of like the, you know, it's almost like a cantina scene.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that stuff. But, yeah. But I know what you mean.
So anyway, all in, this movie answers the question that's so hard for me to answer when people ask me about an 80s movie that I've just watched. You know, when I say people, some of you listening will reach out and ask, but also my brother, you know, mm-hmm. and other people will mm-hmm. say, well, how does it hold up? That's the hardest question for me to answer because I'm viewing this movie, and when I say this, I mean like any 80s movie, through the lens of, I don't care how bad it is, there's still aspects of it that are just amazing to me.
Yeah.
This, however, to me, in so many ways, the answer is yes, it holds up.
Yeah.
The practical effects look really great. Yes, there's certain areas that, would they have been able to do X, Y, and Z a little bit better now? Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We saw it in the movie Prey.
Yeah.
But for this movie coming out in 87 and, you know, being filmed, I guess, in 86, 85, 86 or whatever, and for only $15 million,
yeah.
and they had to deal with just Jean-Claude just freaking kickboxing everybody every second he had a chance.
That's amazing.
I'm going to kick this guy's ass. Oh, and he just like would be nonstop apparently just about like, I'm telling you, the alien must kickbox. Anyway.
Oh, God, that's
what
fun.
Kind of a deal? And... and someday we're going to do an episode about Bloodsport because I've actually got Frank Dukes's autobiography and mm-hmm. it's even more fantastic than you could imagine.
Oh, that's
pretty
awesome.
Sure he's made it all up. And
yeah, happens.
Anyway, this movie absolutely holds up. It belongs mm-hmm. in a top 10 slot for me.
Yeah.
It reminds me of being an 80s kid. It's a time travel device that you can use yourself to transport yourself into the 80s and just enjoy it. So I recommend anybody listening who hasn't seen it in a long time,
mm-hmm.
watch it, grab some popcorn, and watch this and enjoy this gem of a movie that existed back in the 80s.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we get out of here, I just want to say, you know, in the last several months, we've had some, you know, unfortunate like passings of some folks. I just want to give a sort of moment of silence to Robbie Robertson, which is one of my all-time favorite guitar players and songwriters. He was in the band, which was Bob Dylan's band. He passed away. Actually, had the opportunity to hang out with him back when I lived in L.A. We had an engineer, a guy named Roby, and so he was friends with Robbie Robertson. They were both Canadian. And he would come by the studio a good bit, and like, you know, I got to learn a lot of things from him and, you know, just talking to him. And he was a great dude, and he passed away a while back. And also just the iconic Paul Rubens, who, you know, helped shape our childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah, with you know, Pee Wee Herman's Playhouse and then the movies that would follow. So here's a moment of silence for those two. All right. If you'd like to hit us up online, you can. Typically, we're over on Instagram. Drop us a line, shoot us a comment if you want to talk about maybe a paranormal thing that you've encountered or maybe a 80s gem that, you know, has flown under the radar that maybe we have never heard of. you can drop us a DM or shoot it to thatwouldberadpod@gmail.com. Or even better, you can head on over to thatwouldberadpodcast.com, our website, where you can directly leave us a voice memo or voicemail or whatever, telling it in your own voice. We'd love to hear from you. Get out there and tell a single friend about the show right now as you're listening. Just send any friend of yours a message or a link to our podcast. It helps tremendously. And, you know, we have had a good bit of people be like, hey, you know, my best friend told me about this and, you know, I'm a forever fan now. And that's amazing. We love to hear it. Give us a 5-star review if you have time. It really does help sort of tweak the algorithm in our favor and get us in front of new ears and new listeners. If you're not getting enough, that would be rad, you know, gold over here on the free feed. Head on over to our Patreon. That would be rad. The Rabbit Trail. And join us. It's more of what you love. And yeah, we'd love to have you over there. And we're grateful so much for the folks, you know, our patrons. You got anything else, Woody?
I think that's it, man.
Right on, dudes. Well, go watch Predator. We love you. We appreciate you. And as always,
be rad. That's the way it goes.
Granted.
Let me get that ball.
Hurry up.
Hold on, pal.
All right.
I'm glad you showed up prepared, okay, man. I'm so glad you showed up prepared.
I mean, I figured none of that would be used anyway.
I'm definitely using that part where it's just you just like, hold on, pal.
I mean, oddly enough, that's kind of what it sounds like. I'm guessing whenever you pick up.
All the time, man. Just if I could give you a nickname, it would be Unprepared Bence. Mm-mm. In parentheses, clearest skin of all time.
So stupid.
What are you doing?
I'm recording a podcast episode.
Oh, you didn't tell me that.
I mean, you should know that I'm talking. I heard
you're talking to Woody literally all the time.
I heard you stomping up the stairs and calling.
You're recording it?
Okay.
Shh.